So this story, we've been in John's Gospel for a while, right? So this story that we just heard is the prelude to kind of the final conversation in John's Gospel. We've been looking at some of these conversations as they've happened. And it leads up to a story that some of you may know, where Jesus has a conversation with Peter where he asks him the same question three times. And it's interesting in lots of ways. It's interesting because it's kind of the final chapter in some ways that we know of Peter and his story. And it points to this idea of the importance of questions, because there are some very important questions in life. I mean, if someone who's a chronic liar tells you they're a liar, are they lying? See? Some questions aren't easy, are they? Do cows have calf muscles? Anyway, there's lots of important questions. We'll get to some of them later. The important question here that Jesus asks is, do you love me? And that's a question that some of us may have asked, or some of our friends and some of our family. It's kind of a question that you kind of want to make sure you know the answer to, isn't it? It's not a question that you ask randomly. Do you love me? And I think there's different ways of asking it. You could ask it in a way where you're trusting, or where you're pleading, or maybe where you're reminding. And I wonder of Jesus' tone of voice in this conversation we're going to look at now, and what he was doing. Now, in fact, John, the writer of this gospel, is normally good at answering questions. And sometimes in his gospel, he poses questions to us and he answers them himself. This question, why did you write this gospel? His answer was, this is written so that you may believe, and in believing have life. But here's a question, and the question and why Jesus is asking the question is not all that clear. So this is a masterly ending to Peter's story. So this is what happens. So Jesus has been crucified. Jesus is resurrected and he has appeared to the disciples. But we don't know. It appears, though, that Peter had gone home and that he had gone home to stay. The language in the Greek seems to indicate not that he had just gone fishing, but he was going back to fishing. Right? He was a fisherman when he was first called. So he's going back to fishing, and he's going to continue fishing. And of course, the Sea of Galilee is where Jesus and Peter first met. So this is kind of symbolic in a way of their meeting. And we looked at that story, the calling of the first disciples, where Jesus said to those first disciples, come and see. And for 3 years he's been following Jesus, seen extraordinary things, had extraordinary experiences. And here he is, having gone back, perhaps to go back to fishing, perhaps to his old life, he sees the risen Jesus on the beach cooking breakfast. He's gone out fishing and they haven't been able to catch anything. Apparently that happens when you're fishermen sometimes, does it, Bob? Sometimes you go out fishing and you don't catch anything. And Jesus comes with some advice. Now, I'm not sure how most fishermen appreciate advice from people calling out from the beach, hey, why don't you try it this way? I'm not sure when they, because they didn't recognise Jesus at first, whether they were muttering under their breath or said, sure, I'll follow your advice straight away. Then when they catch all this fish, Peter recognises that it is Jesus. And once again, he jumps out of the boat into the water to go to Jesus. But perhaps all of this, because of this kind of symbolism in this story, is to remind Peter of how his story with Jesus started. Perhaps it's pointed to this idea that for Peter, he needs to begin again. And then what happens is they have a conversation on the beach, and three times Jesus says to him, Peter, do you love me? And Peter replies, you know that I love you. Jesus asks it again. Peter replies. He says, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." And Jesus says, "Take care of my sheep." Then a third time, Jesus says to him, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" And Peter was hurt because Jesus had asked him a third time, "Do you love me?" And he said, "Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you." And Jesus says, "Feed my sheep." And in many ways, it seems a strange conversation. Jesus says to him, not only do you love me, he says to him, do you love me more than these? And one of the things that makes this conversation hard to understand is that we don't know who the these are. For those of you who have studied grammar, that's a demonstrative adjective, right? These, but we don't know who the adjective is pointing towards. Jesus says, do you love me more than these? Who are the these? Is it the rest of the disciples? Is it the fishing? Is it the things of his life? What is Jesus getting at? I mean, sometimes we know the questions are hard to answer. I had a brother who was, I still have a brother actually, I have two. I don't know why I forgot them. But I have a brother who's a year older than me. As you can imagine, we were very close as boys growing up. But sometimes I used to borrow his stuff without asking. Sometimes if he had toys or clothes or anything really, I just felt I could take it. And he would say to me, "I know you took it." I'd say, "No, I didn't." "I know you took it." He said, "Do you think I'm stupid?" Well, there's a question, right? How do you answer that? There are some questions that are hard to answer. Is my comb-over attractive? Is always a hard question to answer. So here's this hard question. Do you love me more than these? And it's not clear, I think, for Peter what Jesus is getting at. Because eventually he says, "Jesus, you know me. You know my heart. You know that I love you." What are the these? More than these guys, more than your old life, more than these disciples. Perhaps he was reminding him, and lots of people read this into the story, that Peter had denied Jesus three times. Right? And so perhaps it's to remind Peter of his failing and what had gone on before. Many people talk about this story as the reinstatement of Peter. This was the Peter who swore that while others may desert Jesus, that he, Peter, never would. Certainly seems to be part of that. Seems to be personal. It seems to be a call in a question that reminds Peter of what matters most to him. The story in the early church is that Peter, we don't have kind of really reliable records on this, but the story in the early church is that Peter was eventually crucified. And that he was crucified upside down. I'm not sure if you've heard that legend. And it actually comes from a story written about 100 years after this gospel was written. And it's called the Legend of Quo Vadis, which is a Latin term that means, where are you going? And the story is, the legend of the early church was that Peter was leaving Rome. The persecution under Nero had escalated, and like many Christians, he was fleeing the city. And as he's leaving the city, he sees Jesus going back towards the city. And Peter says to Jesus, "Where are you going?" And Jesus says to him, "I'm going to be crucified." And Peter realizes that it's his job now to face whatever comes, as his witness to Jesus, and he goes back to Rome. And for him, that road of discipleship will be the road of the cross. And of course, Peter, we assume by the time this gospel was written, had already faced that. And if you read this story, there's elements of that in it. So let's think about what Jesus actually says in this question. He says, "If you love me, feed my sheep." That's his answer. Peter, do you love me more than these? Peter says, "Lord, you know that I love you." Jesus responds, "If you love me, feed my sheep." And so it's Jesus' response to Peter that is the heart of this story. And it's a reminder for Peter of the priority. He's saying to Peter, love me first and then do my work. Love and obey. Now, Jesus has said this explicitly back in John 15. He says, if you love me, obey my commandments. If you love me, obey my commandments. And it's actually this idea that Linda was talking about before. Right? There's this connection between what we do and how we live out our faith. I would say that love without obedience is meaningless. Now, it doesn't matter whether your love language, whatever it is, whether it's acts of service or for some people it isn't. But if your love doesn't lead to action of some kind, is it truly love? I don't mean obeying orders. But if you love someone, would you not want to help them? Would you not be willing to serve them? Would you not, in big ways and small ways, would you not be willing to do something? Love is always seen in doing something. It's not just a feeling, is it? Love always leads to action. If you loved me, you would help me. If you loved me, you would sacrifice for me. If you loved me, you would suffer with me. Obedience is the proof of love. But obedience without love is also flawed. That too is not enough. We used to have this song in the Salvation Army. It used to be in our songbook, but it got dropped out of a revised version of our songbook because it kind of expressed an idea that wasn't quite right. The song said, by the pathway of duty flows the river of God's grace. And it was this idea that you had to do the right thing and then God would reward you. And he was a very good man, the songwriter, right? He wrote lots of other good songs. But it kind of sent the wrong message. Because it's possible to be so busy for Jesus that you don't think about Jesus. So it's possible to be so busy in our lives that we don't think about the people we love. That's possible, right? We can make that mistake as human beings. One of the great writers of the Salvation Army was a guy called Samuel Bringle. And he was this holy, holy man. He wrote books on holiness. He was revered by the early salvos. He was an American salvo. And I heard this story not from a salvo, actually, from somebody, because he had been a Methodist, right? And this young Methodist minister saw this great man of God on a bus in Boston, where he lived. And he said to him, what's your greatest temptation? And this man who talked about the holy life. And he said, well, my greatest temptation is to do something for God before I spend time with God. It's possible to be so active in the service of Christ as to forget to love him. There's this connection between love and action, but love comes first. Augustine, that great preacher and teacher from North Africa, said, wrote in one of his books, he said, love God and do what you will. Love God and do what you will. And he didn't mean once you love God, you can get away with anything. He said, if you truly love God, what you will be obedient. It'll be what God wants of you. If you truly love God, you will do what he asks. Jesus says, you love me more than these, I know that, so feed my sheep. And as Peter points out, Jesus knows Peter's heart, but he's asking him the question for Peter's benefit, to help him realise something, to help him realise what came first. You know, I think we understand this. You know, Sharon could say to me, I could say to Sharon, do you like my cooking? And she could say, sure, darling, of course. And I could say, Sharon, do you like my cooking? And she could say, oh, I love everything you make. And I could say, Sharon, do you like my cooking? And she'd say, of course I like your cooking. I appreciate everything you do for me. That's just an example of a conversation we can have, Sharon. We ask the question again and again, to really think about the answer. That's what happens, isn't it? When we're asked the same question again and again, we think about the answer. And I will say that Sharon is very appreciative in general of my cooking. What does this story mean to us, though? What are we to learn from this story? You see, Peter was Jesus' best friend, his best friend on earth, and his best disciple. And Jesus says to him, "Do you love me?" And the thing that most of us see in Peter is that he's each of us, isn't he? He's kind of super keen, but he's imperfect. He's failing, but sometimes he's magnificent. He's kind of like us. So it's a question for us too. Jesus says to us too, "Do you love me?" And of course, like Peter, it's easy to answer in a setting like this. "Of course I love you, Lord." But is it? Is it easy to love Jesus? I mean, what does it actually mean to love Jesus? What do we mean when we say that? How can we love this Jesus we've never seen, that we've never physically touched? It is possible to love someone that we can no longer touch. Right, we know that. I was talking to Sharon about her grandmother and her mum's mum, who died the year that I met Sharon. I never got to meet Jean Isabel. But the thing that always strikes me when Sharon talks about her grandmother, who died over 35 years ago, is that I can still hear the love in Sharon's voice. And you know that feeling, don't you? There are people who are no longer with you that you love, and your love has not died because they're not here. So we can love people even when they're not here with us. We understand that, but there are precious memories, shared life together, that means we can love past death. But what about if you've ever never known them? So my father died when I was 4, and I have no real memory of him. But I know a lot about him. I've seen many, many pictures of him. And when I was a little boy, particularly my grandmother used to say, kind of wrongly really, that she saw me, saw him in me. And I used to seek out people who knew him. I wanted to hear these stories. I wanted to hear these stories. So do I love my father who I never knew? Well, in a way, I do, I think. I certainly honour him. I admire him. It appears he was a pretty good bloke. That's kind of closer to our love for Jesus, because we haven't met him. We've heard stories. We've certainly heard word pictures of what he was like. But see, there's even more in this for us as Christians, because Jesus is alive in us through his Spirit. The Spirit helps us feel the presence of God. It matters a great deal that we can feel Jesus, that we can feel our love for Jesus in our hearts, that the God of the universe knows you and me, and he knows our hearts, and he helps us to know him and feel him and love him. His love is activating us, quickening us, making us alive to Jesus. We can feel him here. Somebody once talked about worship, and they were saying, "What I love about worship is I feel that the risen Christ walks among his people." And I love those moments in worship. You know them? When we sing a song that just touches our hearts, when we hear a prayer, when we hear a testimony, when we pray together, when we read scripture, and we just feel that God is here, and the feeling bit matters. The risen Christ is here with us now. And the question for each of us is, do you love him? Do you love him? Do you love him? And of course, I would want the answer for each of us is, yes, I do. Lord, you know that I love you. Lord, you know that we love you.